So,
come join us each Friday evening at Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me.
Erica, wake up, Erica. Wake up. I would do your getting sleepy thing, but that wouldn't be a good thing. Wake up, wake up.
Yes. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.gscott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Breaking news. Strange black pyramid UFO ships over every major city on the Earth. People are exhilarated and scared. Reptilian strange creatures are beaming down. My God, they're beaming me up with them. Don't put that probe there. Don't put that probe there. Don't put a... Listen to the Church of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchard, bringing you The High Strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com.
Hey, it's Giorgio, the aliens guy from the History Channel's Ancient Aliens. Join me, Ghostland Observatory, and so much more at the Sugar Mill for Cosmic Fest on Friday, December 21st to help prevent the end of the world. For tickets, visit CosmicFestNOLA.com.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com. Show updates, and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway. MindCemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we co-host a new show called News on the Flip Side. You can catch us every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central, where we will be discussing current events and topics going on in the world today. We have opinions on everything. There's no topic that we won't discuss, and we'll go places that other shows wouldn't dare.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
You're listening to the Galactic Connection Radio Show on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Stay connected by visiting thegalacticconnection.com.
To the first show of the year, everybody, 2013. Ooh, yeah. This is the Galactic Connection radio show, and I am, as usual, Erica Getch, your host. And it's actually January 11th, so close enough to the very first of the year, my first show of the year. Now, I'm sure everybody remembers what happened in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. well, shall I say, we know about it and the surrounding, you know, legendary UFO crash incident and all that. But one thing is for sure, that almost all the evidence obviously isn't at our fingertips anymore. It maybe used to be, and there was all the speculation and all the people talking about it. But my guest tonight is going to talk about the research and possible evidence for what is called the Kingman UFO incident, and it kind of happened only about 6 years after all of the, you know, Roswell stuff. So it happened in Kingsman, Arizona, and it's really, if you think about the map, it's just right next to each other. I mean, really on the map it is. Mr. Harry Drew is my guest. He's an author, ufologist, historian, former museum director and curator of history and all sorts of stuff. Harry, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I want to mention your website to everybody. Check it out, you guys. It's KingmanUFOCrashes.com. And it's got a lot of information on there. So so I know you have you wear a lot of different hats, if, you know. And so I was wondering if you could just, of course, give us a little bit of a brief summary, though, of what got you into just being here on the show, just being in your research and everything. And like sort of did you grow up, you know, studying everything, or did it kind of progress like that?
First off, Erica, hello. It's really good to speak with you, and I appreciate being on your show. And I say Happy New Year to everyone out listening.
Well, thank you.
I started out being interested in history when I was very small, with my father when I was 6 years old and saw my first UFO. He was looking up, and I looked up to see what he was looking at as he held my hand, and it was a mothership. I had no idea at the time. Then I became more interested in archaeological and anthropological things because father was the head of an archaeology society, and I was an early digger, as it were. And it went on to be where my interest progressed, and I became a museum director and curator, as you mentioned, and a cultural resource specialist of ancient civilizations. I essentially retired, came to Arizona. I live at Kingman, and I heard this story about the Kingman UFO crashes, and I began to investigate just out of curiosity, and I kept running into diametrically opposing stories, and that's very suspicious to a professional historian, where someone says something and then someone else repeats it later, writes it down, and adds a little spin on the end and makes it theirs, and you have this corruption of history that becomes a historian nightmare, and we don't want that on our screen or else. So I decided I'm going to go and do what I can to find out, was there or was there not a crash? And that's how it all started. I, at the same time, was providing, a good friend of mine is Bob Brown, who is the grandmaster and former owner of International UFO Congress and Film Festival for years and years, and I volunteered and I was his photographer for the event. So I met everyone, pretty much, in the paranormal and U.S. field, and wasn't really getting anything from all of those people either. They had the same canned, corrupted stories. And I really do say corrupted. Some of the stuff is just right out of space, the things that have been said about what happened, because it's part of a systematic disinformation program about one of the very earliest recognized UFO events in the United States. And as you said, it follows Roswell. And I would tell you this, that 5 days after the Roswell crash, two businessmen in an aircraft, private airplane, coming into the Kingman Airport, feared for their lives and were doing a lot of air-to-ground communication, basically pleading to be able to land right now because they were being buzzed ominously by flying discs. That was 5 days after Roswell in 1947, And this is the other clincher. Nobody here knew anything about Roswell.
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting to even hear that.
Heard.
5 days after even having that, for example, and people are not, you know, it doesn't
not
seem to be rousing suspicions.
Excuse me. Say that again.
I'm just saying, I'm kind of baffled at even the thing that happened with the 5 days later, and you know, people aren't talking about it that much.
Yeah. Let me set the stage for you and for all of the listeners. Kingman, Arizona, 1953. This is May. And what I call 7 days in May, because that involves the events that I'm going to speak about here. And the nearest thing that I can provide to everyone who is familiar with any old television shows is Mayberry, USA. Population here was approximately 3,500 people. There was zero TV reception here. None. No radio other than skip in the evenings. We're all familiar with the old radio fade in and out. Limited telephone. Phones out in the country, which wasn't very far from what we call Old Town Kingman, were in an oak box with a dry cell battery and a hand crank. So this is what we're talking about. There were exactly two roads in and out of Kingman, Arizona in 1953. The exaggerators, the people that I so kindly kind of refer to as pretenders anyway, who state that they know about this, talk about the UFO, the Kingman UFO being moved across Highway 40, and 40 was shut down from Kingman, Arizona, west to Barstow, California, 235 miles for 4 days, UFO across the highway that wouldn't be built for 31 more years. If you see the problems here, and as a historian, I went back to 1856 and walked forward to find out how many roads there were and where they were. Simple things. And then, of course, weather reports that go back to 1901, and one of the exaggerators says, oh, it was knocked down by a bolt of lightning. It was a lightning storm. The entire week had clear skies, low winds, 82 to 84 degrees. And I could go on for hours with, like, little details, but they're stories, and it's polluted the real story. And here's the real story.
Okay, before you do that, Harry, let me just set the stage. You are an advocator, and as you say on your YouTube page, you're an advocator of telling people to get out there, and this is, you're living it, right? You're doing your own research because you want to make sure that it's not corrupted, right? And this is where you have all of your research and your details, and I'm excited to hear this. So go on with the story. I want to hear what happened, because this is interesting already.
Yes, and you're right. A professional historian who is bound by ethics to try to keep his own or her own opinion out of what they're doing and not to get into the exaggeration end. And the entire, I would say 99%, of what's being said about the Kingman crashes is made up or distortions, or they're worried about whether one of the principal witnesses spelled his name right. And it's like, you don't know how to spell your own name? Or one who appears on some Saturdays on the big AM station that handles these people has told some real humdingers, and it includes in a book he wrote. I checked all the news, or no, it's on his blog. I checked newspapers within 100 miles of Kingman, Arizona, including Las Vegas, and never found a word about anything to do with UFOs, and then said, remember, if a UFO crash is a favor, it never happened.
Well, isn't there some, let's also mention, though, that in you know, there are some that spin it, but then there's the others that just hear it, and they're thinking that this is legitimate, and then So they're carrying it on, but they don't really know it's the spin. You know, they don't realize what's spin and what's not. So
right.
I can see where, you know, it starts to get, well, real muddy, you know, and so you're going to clarify a little bit for us. So
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, to clear that up so that everyone understands, that sounded a little bit odd, and I checked, and the first thing I found out was there's only three newspapers in the last, from 1953 up to now, within 100 miles. And Las Vegas doesn't even know we exist still, you know, so it's not even relevant. But what it told me was the person that was saying this was spending a lot of time sitting in front of a PC. And I was out in the desert in my Jeep. I was out on my 110 degree days where the desert story won't sink or something, and climbing through snake infested and javelina, if you know what those are. They look like a wild boar. They're very dangerous and aggressive. And through country where those were, and all of these things, really looking and to find what I did find. And I also did something somebody else wasn't really doing. I went looking for eyewitnesses. They're really necessary if before they're all gone. I also was working with a report that was produced in an interview by renowned and highly respected UFO investigator Raymond Fowler back in 1973, 20 years after the crash. He talked to one of the principal people, a scientist, a physicist, and an engineer who was actually at the site, taken there by the Air Force, and inspected this craft that landed, and we'll get to that in a second. He was one of four that actually touched the craft. They didn't know each other, they never met each other, and they did this independently of each other. There were 15 witnesses on the ground that watched the craft come down.
Well, that's
residents
really interesting,
of Kingman.
Yeah. So, did you just mention somebody touched, like physically touched?
Yes.
Okay, so
yeah,
we've got to get to that
ahead
to make sure we have enough time, of course. So make
yes
sure you you scoot along a little bit to make sure we get that in, because I'm sure it's gonna be very interesting.
Yes.
So if you I was going to say you could just go ahead and mention briefly a summary, maybe, if you want to, or what people saw, since we only have an hour, what people, the report that people got, but maybe what you have done differently, and if you want to put that in there, or do you just want to tell it from the complete,
story? Yeah. What I did differently, Erica, was that I actually did research. And I also did real field work. And I couldn't go to the National Endowment of Humanities and ask them for a grant to go and do research on UFOs. They don't do that. So I spent tens of my own thousands doing this over a six-year period. And I don't regret it whatsoever, because I came up with far, far more than I ever expected. I was trying to find out if there was ever a crash or not. And here's what I found out. Some of it was in paper. That told me the person that said he checked them all, he didn't. Here's the stats on it. There were 11 UFOs in this one week in May, 18 May to 24 May. Okay?
Wow.
11 UFOs.
Wow.
11 UFOs. One UFO landed, two UFOs crashed, there were 44 ETs involved, six taken alive, four taken dead, two taken to the sheriff's office, and they escaped.
Okay, you just
did
blew
I
my mind. That's
that?
Incredible. Yeah, that's an incredible mouthful of information.
What's incredible is I can prove it, and people are beginning to understand this now. When I made a presentation for the UFO Con in the Bay Area in September, and it was pretty well packed, and they finally got a lot of them figured it out, and it's like, hey, we're not talking about just maybe two or three UFOs here. And on the front page of the Prescott, within about 100 miles from Kingman, the day after a busload of 40 scientists and specialists arrived on May 21, 1953. That was 4 days, possibly five if you're part of the Air Force recovery team on the ground with the what is a flying saucer. It's not unidentified. I have drawings of it. I have an annotated report from the Mojave County historian of 1978 that was sent to him by Mr. Raymond Fowler, who did the first interview and talked about a man by the name of Fritz Werner. But the newspaper in Middlesex, Massachusetts, ran a story on a young boy who did an interview, and they mentioned the man's real name, Arthur Stansel, spelled F-E-L at the end. That was an argument by this same guy that didn't think there was anything in the paper. And by the way, this is all top secret. Everybody needs to understand. This was top secret. There were four crew members and a craft that came down. It was forced down. I know why. Other part of the story. And these things are in what I've just put together. I'm releasing coming over this weekend on DVD. And it's incredible. They were on the way to an underground base. There are a couple of flyways here. We see them now. I see them more than ever because of that, and we'll never be able to cover everything I'm trying to tell you. Because since I found the landing site for the Kingman craft of May 18, that the scientists come to look at on the 21st of May, 4 days later, since I found the site of where it is, after interviewing the last living recovery team member that was in the Air Force and here. In his interview, he told me something in passing, and I pay attention to every word they say because they can have meaning. It gave me the clue that narrowed my hunt from 448 square miles down to 20 and then down to 5, and it made it realistic for me to find this place. Spent a year there documenting the site every way I can before it becomes public knowledge, because it will be stripped bare by tourists or people interested, and there won't be a one twig on top of another. But since I've been there, I am visited at my desert home here in Arizona frequently, and my consulting engineer, who, by the way, developed the most advanced flight system on the planet for the ROV for James Cameron, and was with James Cameron, and it made impossible for James Cameron to make the Mariana Trench dive 10 or 11 months ago, was my engineer, and went out with me with a drone, and we did special types of photography for me because I can read terrain. I'm trained in that. So that I could see the site the way it is, not from like Google Maps or satellite or any of this stuff, something down 30 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet, or 300 feet. Plus I'm on the ground. Changes happen. Climate's changed. More precipitation here than we had before. And that makes some differences.
So let me ask you, Harry, so on your, do you have all of this, you know, you walk through and you're showing all of this? Is that correct?
Oh, I have everything documented in documents, military documents, congressional documents, personal interviews, video on camera interviews. Everything that I have to do as a historian, I'm just like I'm still back as a museum director and curator.
Right.
And it's really tough because we've got to be tough because people aren't going to believe it. And it's like somebody saying, well, see, what I found was, I found the landing site exactly the way the Air Force left it 60 years ago. They call that in situ. Nobody's been there digging. Nobody's been there picking around. No, and so when I found the landmark, which was the clue that the Air Force recovery man gave me in an interview a year before he died, when I found that, I was almost point blank with where it landed, and I turned around with my Jeep and pulled up and I looked right straight, and I knew it was the field kitchen for the Air Force, because they had 20 military police there. They had people bringing in equipment from Camp Irwin. It's called Fort Irwin today. I just moved from infantry to armor, and they got an M-25 order to carry the craft, because this UFO was not damaged. It had not even a scratch on it. And when the Air Force recovery team flew in, they were there 2 hours after it landed. When they got there, a crew of four ETs were standing outside of it, and they were immediately transported to Groom Lake, because they're top secret. You don't leave aliens standing around. You just don't do that.
Yeah. Well, maybe this day and age, I don't know. But can you give us a visual, Harry, on the ETs or the craft? Some kind of a description so I can imagine, like, was it typical saucer shape?
I'm about to give you a description.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a description, and I will not be able to relay adequately the reaction and watching the recovery team member as he retold that to me, and the emotion that he displayed, because the same year, a George Powell movie, War of the Worlds, was released, and the Martians came, and they had suckers on their fingers. And all of these things. And so they didn't know what to expect. He didn't know what to expect. It was his first recovery. He was on six. And so he said they got out of the truck that they were brought up in, and the military were taking up position to set up perimeter. And he walked over to the four aliens, and he said they were about shoulder height, and they were human. He meant humanoid. Their eyes were not large. They were slightly further apart than what we would... You actually see that in the human population. You just don't see it a lot. And the chin was more pointed, as if you would think of a heart shape for like a Valentine box with candy. It was more pointed to the end. Other than that, relatively short, sandy-colored hair. They were like in jumpsuits. They went in G-Force pressure suits or any of that. It's just like a one-piece coverall. One of them, if you're ready for this, and if everyone will consider, you know, it's like, that isn't my intention here, but if you want to know more, it's on one or both of the two DVDs I'm releasing. And all I can say is look at it for yourself. And I have more to say about that later. Not here, but another DVD coming, because I can't get it all in one place.
Okay.
Anyway, so one stood between in front of the other three, and as the Air Force recovery team walked up, that alien spoke, and they understood it as he was speaking with his mouth and in English. I said this in UFOCon, whether they believed that in their head because they were meant to, or they heard it with their ear, I can't tell you. The perception from the eyewitness was they spoke, and one of them stood and represented the other three, all of them actually. And the only condition that they placed on being moved is that they all be moved and kept together, not separated. And they
I could see that if they have humanoid, you know, they're gonna have a human ability if they have a certain amount. So yeah,
well,
that's interesting.
Since then, it's almost struck me. It's like the way we think now. And here's when you talk about King in 1953, you have to stop thinking like you think now. You can't know all the things that you know now, because they didn't. And you have to go back in that technology and the education level and all these types of things and the taboos. But to me, it strikes me like they were hybrids. I mean, something like a hybrid. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and shoulder height, about 5 feet in height. And they didn't have, they weren't grays or any of these other things. And so I can only tell you, as I always say when I write, and I've been an author for 40 years, that this is what is as told to me, quote unquote. And this person was lucid and very intellectually sound. And he pointed a finger at me, I can remember, and he said, don't you ever believe that they took the crew or the craft to Wright Patterson. They never did. And that's the humdinger of the whole thing, because this craft was taken to Green Lake. I know exactly the way they did it, where they went, all the problems they had trying to get all that river, the whole thing. And it became the first craft and the craft that we all know about at Area 51. Without this craft, there wouldn't be the Area 51 story. This is the one that was used for reverse engineering. It was taken below the ground to S4. That's the story. All I know is it was first taken to a hangar there. It was joined shortly thereafter by the Red Lake Food Tank crash UFO, where two of the four-member crew were severely injured because on the way down, as it fell out of control, for the same reason the other craft went down out of control, overpowered, triangular configurated, like the triangle, overpowered, triangularly configurated radar. And they flew, and the Air Force switched it all on, and it was right smack in the middle of the UFO flyway. And they just shot him out of the air, and the Air Force did not know that, and I have a document that's an internal document in the Pentagon where the one officer is sending a communication on saying, do you think that maybe it's our radar that's shooting them down? And that came later than the Cayman thing. And you'll also find that on the cover of Dr. Greer's book, that same letter.
Did you actually talk to any witnesses that were actively talking about the radar-type interference?
Did I talk to? Yes, I have them on film.
Oh, you know? Great.
Oh, yeah.
The one
I'm telling you about is on film, okay? And then an engineer who worked with the craft at Area 51. I also have interviews with an aviation historian and museum curator who is connected to all of this, including his family, led me to the Red Lake Food Tank site. He couldn't find anything because the families that saw this thing go down, there were 12 people that saw that one go down, 15 on the first craft, the one on the 18th. That's the one that wasn't damaged. All four crew members are fine. And the Red Lake one, the craft came down, it descended. Basically, I don't know what was wrong with it. We might think it's avionics, or I have no idea, but it went down, failed to clear the top of the rocky butte, hit it, and ricocheted off, and the witnesses thought it went into Futank, which is a term used in Arizona long ago, before. It has nothing to do with Foo Fighters, but it's spelled the same, and it means it's a dirt dam with water backed up from monsoon and snowmelt, if there is any, or rain, for livestock. And it was big enough to water about 200 cattle. And they thought it went into that, and the Air Force team was still here. And, in fact, the morning of the crash, early in the dark of the part of that morning, the Cayman craft went by within a mile of where this thing went down, out in the desert. On the way to Groom Lake, it was being taken by an M-25 tank transport. Anyway, two of the crew were roughed up, but okay. Two were severely injured. They were taken to Nellis Air Force Base. They died there. So you suddenly have two. 2 days later, this, by the way, described them as disks. They didn't say UFOs or flying saucers, just disks. And they were also complaining about the radar system because it was killing birds in flight. When they flew in to where the radar system was set up, they went down. And I almost imagined with the amount of power, up to 24 times the rated system power. And why were they doing that? Cold War was already in progress. Korean War had happened. and we had heard that Russia was developing a long-range bomber, and they had a nuclear bomb. So they wanted to increase radar range beyond 25 miles. That's all it was. So they were trying to achieve 150 miles, and they were setting it up. And 2 years later, the early forerunner of backscatter radar came to Kingman and was put on Radar Hill. I have photographs of every bit of this stuff, and including news articles, because it was kind of newsy, but most of it was top secret, so they couldn't say. In fact, Kingman basically operated during the war up until the middle of 1945 under martial law. So
it's interesting. I'm surprised, or, you know, just the fact that the Roswell situation happened, and I'm assuming that radar was involved then. I mean, because why else, in a way, would anything crash? Because, well, frankly, right, their technology is going to be superior, so there's going to have to be some kind of surprise on them. And so it's like they knew, and then what did they do? Beef it up even more because, what, just in case they could get another one and get some more out of it?
Yeah, you've hit on a nerve here. This is the deal, and I go back for just a second because where I say, somebody said, well, just because you found all kinds of evidence, including a physical object that was produced only for the military and only in 1951 and 52, and it's used in a fuel kitchen, and there were hundreds of them there, okay, and I brought some, I have some. I took one to the International MUFON meeting in Cincinnati in August. That's like dating an archaeological site where a Clovis point is found and you know that there were mammoth hunters there. This is more contemporary, but the evidence is the same. It was produced 2 years. It's a special type of container, and it was on, and they had it. So the question was, well, how, you know, so that means that the Air Force is there, so how would I know it was a UFO? I am willing to take the word of four scientists and engineers who have never met each other in their life, didn't know that each other was going to be seeing this object, and then describe it identically
right
at the time, and then 15 witnesses that watched it go down. The sheriff and the undersheriff went out to the site the day after it went down because the Air Force was already getting equipment there, and they couldn't hide going through little tiny Mayberry, Kingman, with all this big heavy-duty lifting cranes and all these things. And they went out there, and the Air Force wouldn't let them do it. The military police stopped them and would not let them go through, and they spent 15 minutes trying to get past a barrier set up. I have to take it as the description and everything else all the way up to when it was put in the ground at Area 51 is accurate. I'm going to go along with that because my mentor, Bob Dean, told me to speculate because I spent about a year and a half troubled about that because I don't want to tell anybody anything that isn't conclusive. But the evidence is overwhelming. In a courtroom, you would win based on what I have. The other thing that we're talking
about. You okay there, Harry?
Yeah, I am. It's one of those wires got pulled. Here we are. The other question you had, maybe you can run that by me again here.
Well, actually, I can't even remember because I'm so into this scenario right now. I have to tell you that it's one of those, I've got my coffee, late night kind of thing, and I'm just imagining all this, like, I really just wish I could get on a plane and just hurry up and go there and, like, investigate, you know. It makes me, that's what I imagine I'm doing, and it's just, Like Bob Dean said, and everybody I think would agree, the ones that have that open mind, it's pretty obvious when all the scientists are saying things. And, I mean, scientists are not going to just, you know, just blow smoke up people's butts, you know. I mean, they're really going to put some, you know, effort into trying to make it as, you know, as credible or whatever you want to call it. I mean, and what you've done with the research, you know, and you add it all together, your speculations are more than that. I'm sure it's really close to, you know, it's truth. I mean, you can't get, you know, there's some things are just in people's faces and boom, there you go. And I think you were supposed to find this. And one thing I have to ask you though, just for my own curiosity is, have you ever had, any kind of, ET interaction, dream state, just anything that might have been a form of, you're not quite sure contact and or straight on contact? Just kind of wondering if, because I have to say the reason I ask is, because I really don't think that you found this for no reason. I think that you were led to it, you know.
Yes, you're right. And I don't really talk about this a lot, but I'm going to do that tonight. And I have not. I will tell you this. Since the discovery of the craft that landed, which is amazing because it's the one that wasn't even damaged, and in spite of the fact that I even found a higher background radiation right exactly where it sits, I don't know if it leaked antifreeze or what, you know, it's like whatever the problem was.
Right.
But what happened was my consulting engineer was with me on the second trip out. I've been out over and over and over and over, and I've done soil porosity tests and a lot of other things, so I'm really getting a well-rounded of what's going on here. And the second trip out, my consulting engineer went with me, and I had noticed after the first trip what looked like a UFO above my house, way up. And I actually set up a movie camera on a tripod and stuck it out there because it didn't move. And so then later I look at the footage, and you can see the star field. Ancient man thought the stars moved by, and Earth's turning. And so on camera, if it's something stationary and you're running a camera aimed up at the stars, everything that's stationary, really stationary, will stay there, and the stars will go ahead and show motion. And this object, so the next time I went out, after I came home, I normally do 2 to 4 miles a walk around I'm on horse property, and I'm in the desert. Up my backyard is 35 miles of desert, okay? And it's like private, and that's why I don't talk about this, because I've had friends here, they see these things, and I really don't want, like, a crowd. This is where I live. And so I go back, and I've just finished my walk. It's daylight, but it's coming up on sunset, and I see an object, and it's big. What it is, it's a mothership, and it crosses the valley floor and comes up within about 2 miles of me, and it just sat there, and I just stood there. So I thought, I'm getting a camera. And I went in my house and got a camera, came out the back door to the endless wastes of the desert, and it was gone. And then I looked, and it had moved up, and it was right over me. And it was about 400 feet off the ground, and it was triangular. And I had to squint because the lights coming from under it were so bright. You could not define the like a light where you have a bulb and you see the ring of where it is. It just illuminated so brilliantly bright.
Right.
And I didn't realize what I was seeing until it really did. It looked like it was sliding sideways, and that's what it was doing. Not a sound. Came around, took meaning west, and the sun is going down at this point, and all of a sudden I could see right through it because it was a triangle when there was no fill-in area. Like a boomerang?
Right.
And I could see then the skin on the surface. It was unbelievable. So I go in after I was
talking. I figured they were probably monitoring you to begin with. They must have known, you know, something, you know, I'm telling you, things like this, you just don't come across like, oops, I stubbed my toe, and there you go, see a, you know, UFO, or there you go, find a landing site. I mean, there's so much that goes into this, whether it's pre-planning or however anybody wants, you know, destiny, whatever. I do believe that, I mean, you have to take a look at it, and it's almost the facts there, you know, to say how can you be like the one that found it, and yet, and you're the one that's doing all this research, so, I commend you for being so private about it to make sure, I mean, that you're getting what you need to do first and then, you know, letting the cat out of the bag, so to speak, because that's got to be a little bit difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, I mean, this is amazing stuff to hear, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let
me
add
you're in prime UFO land, by the way.
The one thing, the real clincher was, after I saw this, pardon me, I had never seen one like this before, and it was so massive, it was overwhelming, and then it just glided away off to the southwest, meaning toward California direction from where I am in Arizona. And I went in the house, and the phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and it was my consulting engineer, and he said, "You aren't going to believe this." And I said, "What?" He said, "About an hour ago, I had this big triangular UFO hovering over my house."
Oh, my God.
Whoa. You know, it's like, hey, I didn't even tell you. You know, it's like you're calling me. So it was a big surprise. But I'll tell you, I've had as many as 15 here of what are a different type of craft. They're two different size. They're machines. They're some type of machine. I've had them come up very close. They land, and I watched them. I finally decided that I would take some photographs. I posted a couple of those on my Facebook page, and one is a mothership, and I took them with a pocket camera, meaning no zoom, no trick digital, nothing. It's just, and I have a whole series of them, and I've had friends here multiple times, multiple friends, and they see the same thing, and I tell them, do not worry, there is no harm coming. I wake up in the middle of the night, 4 o'clock in the morning, I wake up, and I have a big flat-screen TV in my bedroom, because you have to have that, you know? And it snapped on. It's like it wasn't on a timer, and I look over, and there's 42 inches of a UFO flying saucer. And Klaatu's walking down to the edge, and there's a group of people standing there and wondering if he's going to kill them all or he's going to take them in a spacecraft. And it's from the day the Earth stood still. And I swear, I didn't turn my TV on. Did I have? I have things moving, and I have security cameras around my place, and they trip when they're here and out on the ground. If you think about, I'm telling you, they are out on the ground. I get some very odd things. My security cameras pick up, and I have an internal, like in my office where I am now, I have a sensor outside, turns a light on my desk. And it came on, and I looked over, and my DVR is running, and I turn on my monitor, and my God, I'm seeing something I shouldn't be seeing. And these things are just accelerating, and I have them here. That's all I can tell you for now, because anything beyond that, everybody's going to think I'm a real crackpot. Let me tell you about
I know what you're saying. You don't want to sensationalize like that part, because, you know, everybody's going to have their own. I mean, I'm part of a mass, you know, sighting with some friends and various things. So, of course, I mean, until you have witnesses or people that are, you know what I mean, and even with the witnesses you interviewed and everything, I mean, it's the safety of it, but then when you get outside of where people don't have an experience to see or experience any of that, then they have the look in their eye, or they kind of get this, you know, is this person like really telling a spin or something as well. So I can see where you want to get the facts. Do you want to tell people where to find you on Facebook as well?
Just go to Harry Drew at Facebook.
Okay. Also, I do see it's facebook.com/harry.drew.35. 35.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I just saw that. I just clicked on it. I got to ask you, what do you think? This is so late in the game, but I'm going to ask it so we can at least get a good laugh. What do you think, and what are your thoughts on government disclosure? Public disclosure. Do you think it's going to happen ever?
They didn't want us to know then. They don't want us to know now. I haven't told you the story about being out at the landing site and being confronted by the military. There is no military presence here. There haven't been any military presence here since August of 1945. And out of nowhere, where this site is, and I spent 6.5 hours the first day there, there's not even a single vehicle goes by. There's no cell phone reception there. And out of nowhere, a military sub pulls up and two battle dress uniformed military, unidentifiable. I was U.S. Army. I know, you know, you can look for things to see who they are. And there was nothing there. And they had the latest state-of-the-art, what are real, assault rifles, the full automatic and select fire type. They had them sitting butt down on the floor, holding them with one hand. And the driver said to me, "What's going on?" And then pointed his finger at me and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I'm on BLM property. I have a right to be there. And so I played ignorant and I took a little bit of a step back from the window so that it wouldn't be quite so easy to shoot me if they decided. And I told them a story. I asked them, I said, "Oh," like a simpleton, "are you guys out hunting?" And the driver turned his head to the man on the soldier in the other seat, and I suspect he rolled his eyes like, "This guy's a loon," and they drove off. But the problem is they drove off to where I'm positive the base is, and they never came back, and it ends down that way. So they couldn't keep going.
Right.
Yeah. So,
now,
you
have a military background, Harry. Is that true? Did I read somewhere?
What?
Were you in the military when you were, or no? Do you have with any military or family members?
I have a background, yes. I mean,
okay.
I know, I, yes.
All right.
Let me
well,
tell
I was
you
just
really
wondering,
quickly,
yeah. Sure.
Let me tell you one last thing, if you give me just a second here. There was a third crash. It happened on the 24th. That was a Sunday. People going to church and all of that, they see this disc come down. It hit the north face of the Hualapai Mountain. And Hualapai Mountain's right at Kingman. It's 8,266 feet high. It's like a rocky, beautiful. And it set the mountain on fire because it's timber. And all the fire crews at the time went up there with their wet gunny sacks and a bulldozer and shovels and a little canister of water on their back to put out fire. There were no buoy bombers or any of that in 1953. And a Forest Service worker comes on to two men right at the source of the fire. And they're very suspicious. And he takes them in because he thinks they're arsons. And he takes them to the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office is in the 1910 Mojave County Courthouse, which still exists. I have a complete description of everything that happened. I talked to the head of security for Mojave County Court and described the building. It's been restricted to the public for 30 years, and he took me in there and walked me down, and I photographed the places I'm about to tell you about. The sheriff's office had been moved in there back in 1953. You had to go through two locked doors to get inside, where four deputies worked in shifts there 24/7, and they didn't have a sheriff there. It was like and Mayberry, the sheriff, you know, went down to the pond to be with Opie or something, and he just wasn't there. So they had to send a deputy to get the sheriff. So they put these two, I'm going to say the words, strange-looking men, because they were seen by the local newspaper reporter, and he wrote it down, and it was in the newspaper on the front page. And these two strange-looking men were locked in a room that is an interrogation room, and the Forest Service workers sat on an oak bench outside that door that is still there, and the sheriff came, and it was explained to him what was going on. The building is 14-inch thick, poured-in-place concrete, including the ceilings, and they're in the basement, and they are below on no windows or openings of any kind. And the sheriff told the deputy to open up the door, and they stepped in, and the two strange-looking men, two of the crew that survived the crash were no longer there. And I can prove that. And you know what? That happened in 1952, and there were five, and the vehicle vanished too.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. You know?
Surprise? I was trying to find out if there'd been a crash or not. You know, here I am. you know, there's 44 ETs. And that also matches Richard Hall, author and historian and UFO man, who wrote a book in 1988 called The Uninvited Guests. And he talks about four dead aliens being packed in dry ice, taken to Wright-Patterson. Bang! The Red Lake crash, the Futank, and the Wallapai Mountain crash. There were two more dead. There's four. The other ones went to Groom Lake, the living. Weird, huh?
Yeah, it's, and I wonder
and
if
what's
they're
really
still
scary
alive.
Is it's real. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So,
I wonder how they're doing
anyway,
there.
Hey,
that would be a lonely existence. To be stuck in that.
I do. I'm coming up on the 18th of April, for all those that might be interested. I do for Tony of Top Secret Tours, and he does a Southwest UFO Discovery Tour, and then, this is a Southwest UFO Discovery Tour that's from April 13th to the 21st, 2013. I do mine on the 18th. And I take them out to the Red Lake Futank crash site. They actually get to stand there. And you can see where it ricocheted off the hill. And you can see the impact site perfectly clear. I found them. The aviation historian was able to locate them. He was looking in the wrong place. He needed a drone with six cameras out there taking pictures like I did to get different kind of angles and day and different times of day to see how things look for real. So, and for all of those that are interested in that kind of thing, I'm just letting them know. They do a safe tour. You want to be on a safe tour, you do it with Tony Antonio. He does a perfect job. If anybody's going to be at the International UFO Conference and Film Festival coming up at Scottsdale in February 27th, March 3rd, I'll be there. You can see Tony there. He'll be there as well. We'll be sharing the table, and that's just something else. And then I do the tour on the 18th. I'll next be at the New Living Expo in San Francisco, April 26th to 28th. There will be somewhere past, the normal attendance is somewhere past 15,000 at the door that come through, that pay to come into it. So it's a very large event, and you can find them at New Living Expo. I don't have the site name for that, but all of these things are in the DVDs. I'm going to actually post them on Amazon over the weekend. I've been at a dead run. You know what that's like, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I want to say we only have like another minute, but I want everybody to check out Kingman UFO Crashes. AllOneWord.com, KingmanUFOCrashes.com.
Yes.
There's tons of photos. They're really interesting. There's some you're hanging out with Bob Dean, and just there's a lot of the crash site and various things in the tour, and there's a lot of good information. So if you need to find, and I'm just so happy that we got to talk. And even though it was an hour, I feel like, you know, I swear I'm ready to, you know, I need to move. I need to move to Arizona where all the...
If you come here even to visit, let me know, and I will personally take you out. There's only been three people to the landing site ever since the Air Force left, and I'd be happy to take you there. Or
awesome.
You can go to the Red Lake. Yeah.
Let me tell you something, Harry. I don't want the safe tour, okay? I want you... And me, and we got to find ourselves that craft that maybe somebody else didn't even find yet.
Yeah. We're going to see if we can find parts off of the Red Lake Futank crash, because it gutted the bottom of the ship out, and the Air Force, I was told by the Air Force recovery team member, it was swept twice by the Air Force, and all the bottom rockets turned up where it actually hit. They dug everything out and turned it over to try to find any pieces so they'd leave nothing behind. But stuff fell in the reservoir, and later the dam was breached because they were no longer using it for cattle, and it's a liability. And so there's been 60 years of monsoons washing it downstream. And I have a couple of archaeologists who have volunteered to help me if they when I get time to get coordinated, and we start looking downstream in the wash we're going to find pieces of that craft. But the other one we aren't going to find because they took it to Area 51, and the Air Force took it all in one piece, and maybe they fly it. I don't know.
Well, isn't it funny how everything crashes right where the perfect place for no one to find it, or they could get to it first? It's just, you know, coincidence? I don't think so. But thanks, Harry. We're going to have you back on whenever, you know, you want. You're always welcome. And definitely, you know, would love to, any updates, and oh, my gosh, if I can get to Arizona, I'm telling you right now, we got to go see that. But you guys check out KingmanUFOCrashes.com, and Harry will talk on Facebook after or later. And
absolutely.
It was really, 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 oh, God, I just enjoyed this so much. Thank you so much for being on as my guest.
Thank you, Erica. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Thanks, everybody. Return again next week. We're going to have Aaron Green Hicks. And we're going to talk all about MK Ultra, and oh my goodness, watch out, guys. So, talk to you later, and thanks for listening.